We're talking about donating blood and blood supply levels in Wisconsin here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer. Ken, glad you could be here. Straight across the country, blood centers have reported that their supplies have dropped to the lowest levels in over a decade. There's been this urgent call out to give blood, otherwise patients who need a transfusion might not get it. Have you donated blood since the onset of the pandemic? Have you avoided blood drives because of worries about COVID exposure? Have you stopped volunteering for blood drives? What have you wondered about your blood type? Join in 800-642-1234. Justin Kern is Communications Director for the American Red Cross of Wisconsin. Justin, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thank you for having me back on and for sharing once again with your audience. Longtime listener and second time guest.
I appreciate it so much, Justin. So explain, how critical is the current blood shortage?
Yeah, you know, I think sometimes people maybe tune out, right? I think sometimes they hear that, you know, the blood centers or the Red Cross is inviting people to donate blood. And you know, maybe they hear that kind of often, but it is a stage right now where we are concerned. I mean, it's a point when in February, we saw about a 10% drop in incoming appointments, which is unusual. I'm sorry, in the fall.
In
the fall is usually when we kind of build back up our blood supplies. And that's when we started to get very concerned, especially coming into the winter and our typically low January and February months. So really, you know, that need for blood, of course, it is constant, but kind of with the double whammy of the pandemic and kind of everything going on at hospitals right now, we really are concerned and really asking people, especially people who haven't donated in a while or first-time blood donors, to join us once again and make that critical blood donation.
Well, explain a little bit about, is it less people are giving or is demand higher? How does this supply demand get kind of out of whack?
Right. You know, the pandemic was the start of the pandemic was really curious. Obviously, there was kind of a nightmarish scenario right at the start where we were just our teams were just figuring out how to collect blood. And they did an amazing job pivoting and bringing people in, and people turned out in droves. Really, the first year of the pandemic, 2020 into early 2021, we saw great turnout for people coming, making appointments, donating blood. I think it was one of those things that people could do. People wanted to do something, and they could do that safely. But what we've seen, you know, from the summer and in the fall into where we're at right now, is that there's this mix of a drop in appointments. I think some people may be returning to, you know, with vaccinations or whatever, maybe returning their kind of regular stream of things and maybe not thinking about making a blood donation. And secondarily, our hospital partners have returned to a lot of their normal activities, so even kind of doing normal procedures and operations. And so that supply, it has dwindled because of those kind of things, and the amount on the shelves is lower. And so that's kind of really gotten us where we're at right now. I will say Wisconsin's been a little stronger than our partners across the country, especially just coming out of this, the last couple of weeks of the holiday season here. We had some great turnout at our blood drives all around the state. But that said, we are really concerned about January and February and kind of where that leaves us with the blood supply in Wisconsin as well as across the country.
What are the implications then for your hospital partners? Do they have to think twice about elective procedures? How do they make this blood go further?
Yeah, we've started to have conversations with them, of course, in the last more than a month here about what our supplies and what's coming in looks like so that they can schedule and plan. But I think definitely it is the kind of thing where when the blood supply is this limited, hospitals have to make tough decisions on pausing or pausing procedures, putting off elective surgeries, putting off different types of surgeries. And so that is, you know, that's a scenario no one wants to be in. But this is the kind of thing that people time and again have risen to the occasion. People can make an impact and really change that situation by making a blood appointment, donating blood. And, no matter where you are at a local drive or at one of our collection centers in across the state, this is something people can take action on and a problem they can help us fix.
We're talking with Justin Kern, who's Communications Director for the American Red Cross of Wisconsin, and he's giving us an update on the blood supply issues in our state. You can join in. Have you donated blood since the pandemic started? What barriers have you run into while trying to donate? Join in 800-642-1234. Justin, wondering, can you give us, you know, what is the life cycle of a pint of blood? After we give, where does that blood go until it reaches a recipient's body?
Right. It's actually, I think it's pretty amazing. It's almost like magic personally to me. And I've seen it happen behind the scenes, kind of all the machinations our teams kind of put the blood through. But in short, it's got, you can donate about every 8 weeks, but the blood itself really has a just over 40-day lifespan for a whole blood donation. There's obviously, with platelets and that kind of thing, can be a little longer, but you know, you donate, it takes about an hour. The actual donation is probably 8 to 15 minutes. And then we run it through tests. We keep you posted throughout this whole process. The app that we have is pretty great. It kind of gives you this story of the blood. And then we kind of let you know where it ends up, where it's kind of needed most. So we're a national chain of blood distribution. So, you know, 40% of the nation's blood is handled by the American Red Cross. So I have had blood go from anywhere to hospitals in Madison and Milwaukee, as far away as San Juan, Puerto Rico.
Wow.
And that, you know, that's just the case of where blood is needed most by the people who need it most. So, you know, that to me feels good that, you know, it's going somewhere where someone definitely needs it, whether it's something like chemotherapy treatment or maybe even a car accident, wherever that's needed, it ends up. And, you know, you get this kind of, on the app, you get every couple of days, you get this update of, you know, it's been through testing. If you've never donated before, it tells you your blood type.
Mm-hmm.
And then it kind of lets you know, like, which hospital or blood, you know, usually a hospital where that kind of ends up.
Well, that's really amazing how that has really changed with the technology and the apps. Let's take a call now. Becky joining us from Houstonsford. Becky, hi.
Well, hello there, and thank you for taking my call. I am someone who donates blood. But unfortunately, the last time I donated blood, as I was about to leave, even though all the masking protocols and social distancing were taking place at the tables where people were reclining and donating blood, as I was going over to get some liquid to rehydrate at the table, there were a couple of patrons who had just donated blood who'd taken their masks off and had sat down at the table where all the beverages and snacks were, and they were talking loudly to each other back and forth across all of the beverages, and you couldn't even get to it without going past them. So social distancing and masking was taking place at the location where the actual donation was, but not in the rest of the immediate area. So that really bothered me.
Becky, thank you. Thank you for that observation. Justin, what would you say there about the masking protocols, especially at the end when you're replenishing?
Yeah, Becky. Well, first off, thank you for donating blood. It has been, you know, slightly challenging to kind of put into force our normal operations, but also make sure everyone's following all these health and safety protocols. You know, the canteen area is something that at a lot of the drives, what we've seen is we've tried to spread things out quite a bit so that they don't run into the situation like Becky had there. You know, people obviously need to take their mask down if they want to have that cranberry juice and those Cheez-Its after that donation. But certainly shouldn't be a situation where anyone feels put off or like something is, you know, not as healthy and safe as it should be. But it's something that we keep an eye on with every single drive. I think that we have, especially as the course of this pandemic has gone on, I think we've gotten pretty good at it. And, you know, we've had people turn out so that feels like, you know, people feel like this is a healthy and safe thing for them to do. But hearing that, Becky, I appreciate that. And I know we can get better.
Justin Kern with the American Red Cross of Wisconsin giving us an update on blood supply in our state and donations. Have you had a procedure postponed due to a shortage of blood? What barriers have you run into while trying to donate? Have you ever needed a blood donation? What did that mean to you? Join in 800-642-1234. Back in a minute with Justin Kern here on the Ideas Network. we're discussing blood drives, blood supply, a continual need in our communities. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Milwaukee's largest single-day blood drive last week, about 250 people donated, including Maria Varela, who reflected on her reason for giving with WDJT-TV.
My dad, he had a stroke 5 years ago, and sometimes he's needed blood. So, you know, yeah.
What is your reason for giving blood? 800-642-1234. The American Red Cross of Wisconsin's communications director, Justin Kern, with us for about 10 more minutes. Let's bring on another caller, John now in Eau Claire. Hi, John. Go ahead.
Good morning. I'm a longtime blood donor, and I noticed that in the past few years it's been very difficult for me in Eau Claire to schedule an appointment. It used to be that the center would take the calls. You could walk in and make an appointment, but now they simply tell you to call an 800 number. Sometimes I'm referred to St. Paul. Sometimes I'm referred to Milwaukee. It's very difficult. And the last time I made an appointment, again with difficulty, I got up, I showered, I shaved, I showed up on time, and I was told that because they had a person calling sick, they couldn't take my blood.
Hmm.
I was very upset and frankly walked out in disgust.
John, thank you for that anecdote. I just want to pause right here. Justin, what might be going on here with scheduling and what John has experienced?
Yeah, John, I'm sorry to hear that. And obviously that sounds very frustrating, and we'd never want to turn away someone, especially someone who's a longtime donor, knowing that you have helped to save lives with your donations. So I'm sorry about that first and foremost. But, you know, I think especially in the last 2 years, with that kind of we've tried to focus more on the appointment side of things because of some of those health and safety concerns. We want to make sure that we have the right distancing and staff and everything to handle everyone's blood donation in an orderly fashion. So, you know, that can cause the kind of thing where people may not be able to walk in today or next week and get that blood donation right when they're thinking about it. But I promise that, you know, in the days ahead and the weeks ahead, that there will be spots. There are places for people with that patients who come out and make that there's going to be spots for you to make that donation. So, you know, patients, you know, we appreciate your patience and understand that, you know, sometimes it's not going to be tomorrow. It's not going to be right away, but it will definitely be needed and appreciated by people like the person you heard from the television story just a minute ago.
You know, we have seen a shortage of workers, shortages in so many areas in recent times. Have you experienced a shortage of volunteers for blood drives?
Yeah, I mean, certainly, you know, that crunch on both staff and volunteers, we're not immune to that. That said, we've got some amazing, you know, on the staff side of things, we have some absolute just dynamite phlebotomists. I saw dozens of them in Madison and Milwaukee over the last few weeks, and they've been dedicated and really working really overtime to make sure that collections are coming in. But on that same side, right, I mean, our volunteers do make pretty much everything at the Red Cross happen. More than 90% of what we do is volunteer led. So it has been a challenge at times to make sure we've got all those volunteers lined up to greet you at the blood drives, to work those kind of canteens and help in so many other ways. So that has been a challenge, yeah.
Let's bring on another experience, Martina in Madison. Hi, Martina.
Good morning. Good morning. How are you?
I'm doing well. What is your story, good, giving blood?
Oh, Lord. Started in 1979.
No, my goodness.
It's just a wonderful story in itself, but I've been a volunteer, paid staff for the American Red Cross for since then, because it was the Red Cross that saved my life. Mm. By allowing me to donate blood. And that's a wonderful story, but it's too long for right now. What do you want to know? I've given over 60 units. I'm going to be 80 in a couple of days, years old.
And your friends, you have a friend as well, other friends who donate? Yeah. Yes.
Oh, yeah, Charlie. Well, Kankakee County chapter was an ace chapter. Y'all check it out in terms of blood donations. We had a great thing going. way back then, but that changed directors and then things changed. It has happened.
But I think it's important to point out, and I'm just going to reveal here, you're going to be 80 soon, and your friend is 96, still giving blood.
Yeah, well, you know, I called him a couple weeks ago, and he had just come back from giving another unit. And Charlie stopped counting a long time ago. I stopped counting at 60. Because after that, you know, but I was telling your call screener that the last few units I gave her at the Wisconsin State Capitol, which is a wonderful place to give because you get to see all this magnificent art. You're lying there and you're in the presence of some very beautiful people and some very beautiful art. And I can't recommend the Capitol drives more strongly.
Oh, Martina, thank you. And I know Justin really wants to talk with you. So, Justin, go ahead.
Martina, thank you very much. We hear so much from folks like Martina and Charlie who kind of get that itch, and this is the way that they give back because they know the impact they're making as a blood donor. And I think there are some cool, but you know, I think people may have a misconception if they haven't donated in a while. There are some awesome places like the Capitol where you can donate blood. We have a lot of great, something that has kind of stepped up in industry during the pandemic here is beer, craft breweries. We have nearly three dozen craft breweries around the state that now open their doors, including Broken Bat today in Milwaukee, to host blood drives, which is just super cool and just feels like a very Wisconsin answer to the need for blood. And so, you know, but people like Martina really make, you know, they know that they can make this impact and through a blood donation, and that's a remarkable amount of times to come out and give. You know, I think that, you know, I just would encourage folks, you know, to think about folks like Martina that are able to give and find that time, but also think about folks that there's a teenager in Milwaukee named Damaris. He has sickle cell disease, and got a chance to talk with his mother and family as they have set up some drives with us, and when he's talking about to his mother about what he goes through with sickle cell, he says it's like someone is taking a hammer and hitting him on the back of his legs. And the thing that makes him feel whole again, feel well again, are those blood transfusions. So I just would encourage folks to think about, you know, maybe yourself, you're going to make a donation and that kind of thing, but the impact you're making is directly helping someone like Damaris, someone in our own community who desperately needs it.
Justin Kern with us, Communications Director for the American Red Cross of Wisconsin, as we find out about blood supply situation in our state. You can join in with your story about giving, 800-642-1234. Justin, what are some of the new approaches to blood screening, and are donation restrictions changing at all?
Sure. You know, one of the things that we have added, you know, I kind of mentioned Damaris, but we have added sickle cell trait screening for self-identified African Americans. And this is hopefully, you know, just a piece of information that can help folks, you know more about what they're dealing with in terms of their health. But we're you know, trying to encourage a more diverse blood supply. That's just that just leads to kind of healthier community outcomes and availability for folks dealing with things like sickle cell, which so acutely affects the African-American population. And we are participating in a study called the ADVANCE study. And that's the hopes with that is that we can help work with the FDA, who kind of sets a lot of what we do in terms of blood collection, and we can help the FDA kind of review their blood donor deferral policy related to men who have sex with men. And so, you know, I know I personally have some friends who are gay men that aren't always able to donate, and it's, you know, it's a challenging conversation. It hurts them. They want to be able to give back in that same way. So it's our hope with this being participating in this advanced study that, you know, we can work with the FDA to hopefully change some of those aspects of the deferral process to bring everybody in to be able to donate blood.
We only have a few seconds left, but explain any protocols for donating if you've received a COVID booster or a COVID series or a flu shot, anything you would say there.
Yeah, just as long as you know your manufacturer, you should be good to go. There's nothing transmitted via via blood. And as long as you know your manufacturer and you got your shot in the United States, you should be good to go on that side of things.
Well, Justin, thank you for joining us.
I appreciate you having me. And anyone who wants to find out more about donating blood or make an appointment, redcrossblood.org or call 1-800-RED-CROSS.
Excellent. Justin Kern, Communications Director for the American Red Cross of Wisconsin. And we have a link to that email or that the website that Justin referred to. You can find an American Red Cross blood drive near you. It's at WPR.org/mornings. Just ahead, we explore the issues of veterinarians and what they have experienced in the pandemic. You can join in with your pet-related questions, 800-642-1234. News update is next here on the Ideas Network. We're discussing pet care with a Wisconsin veterinarian on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We heard the reports of the pandemic puppy spike in adoptions. According to Pet Health, a firm that runs shelter management software, aggregating data from more than 1,100 shelters, its latest year-over-year numbers for the month of November shows more than 56,000 dogs left animal welfare organizations, along with 64,000 cats. Cat adoptions were flat compared to the previous November. Dog adoptions increased slightly. The data also points to a spike in euthanizing dogs, up 29%. Are you a pet owner? What pet-related challenges have you encountered? Did you adopt a pet during these times? Why? 800-642-1234. Dr. Danielle Mizek is with Janesville Animal Medical Center in Milton. Dr. Mizek, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Good morning. Thank you guys for having me.
Good morning. So, you know, veterinarians have been struggling, especially in rural areas, with staffing shortages of vets, of vet techs. We've heard about burnout and the boom in pet care leading to more hours. How has the pandemic changed how you think about how you approach your profession?
That's a wonderful topic. I think I'm really glad that you guys asked me to come on today. One of the things that I think is interesting to note is I'm a relatively newer graduate. I graduated in 2019 from North Carolina State's vet school, moved up to rural Wisconsin, and I've actually started and seen from the beginning of the pandemic all the way through now. Mm. And one of the biggest things that I think I need people, you know, to see and hear is that it has completely changed how we get patients in, how we see them, the flow and the workflow of getting patients in. But it hasn't really changed how we care for pets. Veterinarians and vet techs are some of the most dedicated people to ensuring animal and human health. And that has not changed. It's just the sheer amount of work that we have to do to take care of everybody who adopted a pet who now has, you know, chronically sick animals that they need to take care of. That is what's changed. And I, one of our vet techs and our veterinarians in our practice and across the state of Wisconsin are absolutely dedicated to what they do.
I noticed that your clinic in particular is no longer taking small animal emergencies after hours. What does that do to?
Yeah, so initially down here in Milton and Janesville, we actually are kind of segregated from the Upper Madison Veterinary Emergency Centers. And so originally our clinic had seen small animal emergencies just to help pet owners because there was, besides driving an hour south or north, there wasn't many places for our clients to go. About halfway through the pandemic, we lost, you know, a doctor to injuries. We had lost a couple of staff to other jobs. And we ended up needing just to be able to maintain our sanity to drop back down, because there's weekends where myself or the other veterinarians have been on and we'd see anywhere from, you know, 6 to 10 patients a weekend. And that's just me, no vet techs, no, nothing, me kind of, you know, pushing through and just making sure I can see everybody I can. Because in addition to our small animal side, we also do large animal emergency calls. And a lot of those are actually on farms. So I'm driving, you know, anywhere from all the way at Broadhead, Wisconsin, all the way down to Caledonia, Illinois, all the way up to Cottage Grove. And that's a pretty large radius to be able to cover.
Do you feel the stress? Have you seen vets experiencing burnout?
Absolutely. I mean, just if you go kind of what veterinarians, you know, we're type A perfectionists. We try our best to make sure everybody else is taken care of. And one of the, you know, the best parts about us is that we care a lot about what we do and about the people and animals we take care of. That comes at a cost when you're a veterinarian, because you can't absolutely help every single person every single time at every minute of the day. And so you kind of internalize that a lot. It tends to build up in your, you know, in your heart and your mind, and you're like, well, maybe I could do more, and maybe I could do this, or if I just give up, you know, 10 minutes with my family, I could have helped this pet instead. Hmm. And over time, you know, in 2 years' time, just that in the pandemic itself, that really adds up on how much you can give, because there is literally pouring from an empty cup. You've got, all I've got left to give you is that cup, you know, and then you've got nothing else to give the next patient that comes in, or, you know, the new puppy or the older dog. You know, there's a, it's very, very true in our profession that we care a lot, and it comes back to bite us a lot of the times.
Dr. Mizek, let's talk about your patients for a moment, because we know that routine care is really important for pets. But if you're booking months in advance, how do you balance that out? What do you want your clients to understand as they book for their pet and try to keep up with this routine care?
Absolutely. So with routine care, what we mean by that is like you're going to your doctor for your annual wellness exam, your physical exam, your screening, talking with your veterinarian about appointments and, you know, just normal day-to-day health things. If you know that your, let's say your rabies vaccine or your, all your vaccines are due in July of this coming year, going ahead and getting on your schedule, you know, 2 or 3 months in advance is the way to do it. A lot of people that we're seeing now are calling 3 days before their vaccines are due. And we, like you said, we've been booked out 3-4 weeks in advance. We have a system built into our clinic, and I'm sure a lot of other practices have. We put in these appointments for sick visits and urgent care visits because of, you know, people, we're seeing more sick pets, more chronically ill pets that are now being seen on a more regular basis. And we've tried to fit those in because those are what's urgent. That's what needs to get seen sooner versus just getting, you know, your annual vaccine. But that comes at a cost of losing wellness appointment. So we can't always schedule just routine wellness because we've added in these sick appointments. And so we're encouraging a lot of our clients as well to just go ahead and, if you know that you're, you know, going to be coming up due in a couple of months, go ahead and schedule it. I recommend that for every pet owner. Take a look, call your vet, just ask for the records, like, hey, when am I due for this? And that way you can be ahead of it, not be as frustrated when you call your vet and you're due within a week and we can't get you in.
We're talking with Dr. Danielle Mizek, who's a vet at Janesville Animal Medical Center. We're discussing pet health, and she's explaining how animal clinics are operating in these times. Taking your questions as well about your pet and your pet's health, 800-642-1234. We heard from Lance in Port Edwards, called in, couldn't stay with us. Lance adopted a dog in these times after serving in the military. The dog came from a puppy mill, Lance says, and Lance said that the dog had one issue after the other, worms, ear infections, but Lance said that they did not have a delay in getting treatment and were really grateful for that. What would you say to Lance?
It's nice to hear those types of stories. I think veterinarians really go the extra mile, especially anytime we can, to help these sick patients, especially new puppy visits. We know that timing of vaccines are critical, so we really try to do everything we can to get these types of patients in, especially ones that they just recently adopted, especially if it's their first dog or their first pet. We really try to work with people on getting all those, you know, settled out, and I really am grateful for people like Lance that call in and just want to say thank you. That means a lot to veterinarians practicing and our vet techs as well.
We've heard that socialization in the pandemic, very difficult for pet owners. How should people who have adopted these pandemic pets make sure their pet receives healthy socialization?
That is probably one of the most common questions we've been asked throughout this pandemic. You know, originally, for people that are wondering what that means, is when the pandemic happened, a lot of people and a lot of puppy classes at local pet stores and things like that kind of shut down. But then a lot of people adopted dogs and puppies and things like that. And so they weren't able to get in to have their puppies socialized, which means, you know, meeting new people, having new experiences, meeting other dogs. And I think one of the things that I've recommended to people is, yeah, we might not have be able to get in these big group settings, but you can still go walk around stores that allow dogs and bring training treats and get them slowly introduced to new sights, new sounds, new ways, you know, of going up to people, just so they have a little bit, instead of just being in the house and being in your backyard and that's their entire life, it really is important to get some of these new puppies and these new dogs that you've adopted out and about, whether that be outside on a hike so you can see people at a social distance but still interact with them. They can still see them doing those types of things, even in a pandemic, relatively is quite difficult. But I think there's great benefit to getting them out, having multiple people meet your dog, especially within your own family unit, not just one person taking care of them. Every little bit helps. And the more you can get them, you know, walking around, socializing, that really will help get your dogs more social in the end.
What if your pet put on weight over the last, you know, put on pounds over the last couple of years? How concerned should you be about your dog or cat really maintaining a healthy weight?
Yep. If you talk to probably anyone in my practice, from vet techs to clients, even to other veterinarians, weight and healthy weight in dogs is one of my, I'd say specialties, but more of my pet peeve. So getting, what I would recommend is, if you haven't had an annual physical by your veterinarian, that's the first and foremost thing that I would recommend. That will at least get you a what's called a body condition score. And we use that as veterinarians to actually calculate the amount of calories, kind of like a BMI in humans, that you, that dog will need to either maintain or lose weight. Hmm. And having that body condition score is how I, as a veterinarian, kind of track their progress, because it's more than just how much fat is on them. It's also about their muscle score and other things. That, and each breed also is very different. Like a bulldog does not look like a German Shepherd. And so the body condition scores mean different things for different breeds. And so starting with that, the veterinarians can then, even if it's, you know, if you were just recently seen and you're still concerned about it, veterinarians are really good about calculating out the number of calories based on the food you have. Mm-hmm. And you can actually get them to tell you how much cups per day should my pet be getting, and get them on a nice weight loss diet if they need it.
How do you evaluate then whether your pet is getting enough exercise?
Yeah, so that's very important. That's one of the things that we harp on here at Janesville Animal Medical Center, is trying to get to, you know, what's your daily routine, what's your exercise, what's your weight and your body conditions for. And so different, when I talk to people, I kind of gauge what their lifestyle is. You know, when I see a farm dog with a, you know, an Australian Shepherd running around who's what I consider a lower body condition, or, you know, in weight, they definitely need a certain amount of exercise just to maintain that. And so having that discussion, knowing what you're doing with your dog, all of that plays into what we recommend for sure.
We have veterinarian Danielle Mizek fielding questions about your pet. Are you a first-time pet owner? Have you recently stopped working from home? How did your dog or cat react? Join in, 800-642-1234. We'll be back in a minute with Dr. Mizek here on the Ideas Network. We're in conversation with the veterinarian on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. About 6.3 million companion animals enter animal shelters nationwide each year, about half and half dogs and cats. That's from the American Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Animals. Have you adopted an older pet, the ones typically less desirable? How is your new pet doing in your family? Anything you want to ask the vet? 800-642-1234. Dr. Danielle Mizek with us for about 10 more minutes. Dr. Mizek, how are pets reacting as their owners return to the office after working from home?
It's kind of a mixed bag from what we've heard from owners coming into our clinic. Some of them have been unfazed. I'd say those are probably more along the golden retriever type of breeds, where we've got, you know, they've been kind of socially used to having people come and go and then leave. But a majority of the ones that we've seen, especially new pets that have been brought in during the pandemic, where the owners were working from home, a lot of them have experienced some level, it's, you know, varying degrees, of what we call separation anxiety. A good amount of calls every week come into, my cat's really stressed, you know, my dog's really stressed, how do I help them? And that's definitely a conversation I would call your veterinarian about, because there's things that we can do to help prevent, you know, not necessarily stop completely, but at least lower the anxiety levels of you, especially as you're moving back into going in back into the workforce and trying, you know, leaving your pets at home. There's medications, there's behavioral modifications. There's a lot of things and tips and tidbits that we can do as veterinarians to kind of help guide that process. And it all starts with that initial, you know, reaching out to your veterinarian, not just kind of enduring it, because usually those types of behaviors don't get better. They tend to generally get worse. So I highly recommend speaking with your veterinarian, especially early on, as you know you're going to be moving back into being less time at home and more time at work.
One thing that could be going on as well in that mix is crate training, that dog being in a crate during the day while the family is away. Do you have any tips on how to kennel train your dog?
Yep, absolutely. And generally speaking, it's sooner rather than later. And trying to make that kennel experience not one of punishment or bad, you know, where bad things happen. So if, you know, if your puppy pees on the rug and you throw him in the crate, they start to associate anytime I do something bad, I go into the crate. So I can't go in the crate or it's bad.
Oh.
And so we tend to recommend using that as a safe space for dogs, especially puppies, like feeding them in the crate, having that door in an easily accessible place where they can always walk in and out, putting toys in there anytime they go in there. But especially like as young puppies, starting them off, you know, in just short bouts of time. So don't just put your puppy in there and leave for 5 to 6 hours. You know, give them like an hour or two in there and then come back out. And every single time they go in the kennel, give them positive reinforcement. So whether that be a treat, you know, some sort of toy filled with a little bit of peanut butter, anything to keep that as a positive association mm-hmm. in small amounts of time as you grow up. Because once you start, if you just automatically assume all dogs know how to crate train, that's when we start to get that anxiety levels rise in a lot of our dogs. So I recommend very small amounts of time frequently.
Let's bring on a caller. Mara Lee is joining us from Rice Lake. Hi, Mara Lee.
Hi. My question is, I have a 14-year-old dog and a 4-year-old dog, small breed. And the 14-year-old, I can see him declining quite quickly, and I think we're coming towards the end of his time. I'm thinking about the younger dog and feeling the loss of the older dog as a companion. And is it better to introduce another dog at this time or to wait until after the older dog passes?
Interesting. Yes, Dr. Mizek.
Hi, Marley. That's a absolutely wonderful question. I thank you for bringing that up. I probably get that question at least once a week, at least around that same similar type. One of the things that I always talk to pet owners about is what's right for your family. So we tend to look at dogs, and they are our family. They react very similar to grief when losing a member of their pack. But one of the things that I encourage people to not do is just go out and get another dog because they know one of them is declining. That generally tends to put a little bit more stress on you as well as the other pack members. Because if you think about, you know, if your dog is kind of losing a little bit of its way and it's getting older and it starts to see as a new pack member, that can be stressful. And then you spend a little bit more time with that new pack member versus, you know, trying to make sure that your older dog is comfortable. There can be benefits to getting one while you still have both dogs in there. But I tend to say what works best for you in your scheduling and your pack members, as well as, you know, what about that young dog? And is that going to be too much to have two younger ones, you know, rambunctiously playing with your older one too? Just things to think about. I don't think it's ever a bad idea. I don't always think it's a great one, but it's definitely something to kind of evaluate. How rambunctious is your current puppy? How much can your older one handle? And then go from there.
Really look at it holistically. Look at that mm-hmm. situation. Marley, thank you. Laura now in Madison. Hi, Laura. You have a question about cats. Decline cats?
I know that's like a really sore subject with people these days. I've had cats for well over 30 years, and I've had more than 15 cats in my lifetime. And I lost a couple during the pandemic, and the youngest one was only 4. She had been declawed. Then I got some new kittens, and when I went to the vet and asked to have them declawed, they said they don't do that anymore. And I know it's like a big fight all the time online. And I just, you know, I don't care about the furniture and everything, but I am mauled every day. So are my children. And it's just, I don't understand, because my cats have never had any ill effects. And I just wonder if that isn't part of this new cancel culture.
Laura, thank you so much. And I want the veterinarian to step in here and really address it. Go ahead, Dr. Mizek.
So that is you're absolutely right. It's a sore subject, and it is an opinion based on who you are as a veterinarian and how you practice. So I will speak only for myself. I cannot speak for other veterinarians. I know in Madison they just passed that law recently, or I think it was an ordinance that stated that they were no longer going to be allowing to declaw cats. What my personal and professional opinion is, I've had declawed cats, and I no longer declaw cats, mostly because of the fact that in some cats, and not every, so your experience might be completely different than another person's experience. When cats get that first digit taken off, they tend to react in a more biting type of behavior. So they no longer have their one source of defense. They tend to use their mouth, or they tend to have stressful issues because they can't defend themselves. And that can manifest in other things like urinary issues and, you know, things like that. But every veterinarian is going to have their, what I call their moral and ethical cutoff line. I personally do not believe in taking off a perfectly formed foot unless it's medically necessary with those toes. But if you ask another veterinarian, they'll be perfectly fine. And there's, you know, we talk to our clients about the pros and cons of both. If you ask any of ours, they have been given a long talking to. I don't try to make anybody feel bad one way or the other. Our practice still does declaw cats. But one of the things that we really try to go above and beyond is educating on what are the long-term possible effects, and then allowing the owner to make that medical decision. They use my knowledge, but it is ultimately up to their decision and then up to the veterinarian performing the procedure.
Well, Dr. Mizek, we only have a few seconds left, but if you have a pet you want to give a shout out to, or if you would like to share with us about what you love about animals, a few seconds.
Absolutely. I have to give a shout out to all my staff and clients at Janesville Animal Medical Center, small and large animal. I really appreciate Wisconsin Public Radio for having me on today. And I thank you guys, all the veterinarians who are listening to this program. You guys are absolutely incredible. And thank you, clients, for being so patient with us. And we'll get through all this together.
Well, Dr. Mizek, thank you for joining us.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Danielle Mizek is a veterinarian in Milton. Just ahead, what is your thermostat set at this winter? Is your furnace working properly? We talk with the heating and cooling service manager about best practices in home heating as part of our Ask a Contractor series. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.